Let's spend a couple of minutes talking about geology, or more to the point, rocks. Here in New Hampshire, we have a rock that everybody's supposed to love, the Old Man in the Mountain. Its image graces our state highway signs. It appeared on the posters for one of the gubernatorial candidates recently. And the amazing thing is, it doesn't exist anymore. There is no Old Man in the Mountain. Now, unlike many of you, I don't come from New Hampshire. So to me, it was just an interesting rock formation. And I really couldn't understand why people talked about how they could reassemble it and possibly actually rebuild it. And I thought, there are other things for people to worry about. But those of you who are natives of this state would possibly disagree, because to you, the Old Man in the Mountain symbolizes everything about New Hampshire. Hold that in your memories for a moment. Closer to home, specifically in my in-law's house, inside the front door, is a piece of concrete. And as coincidence would have it, it also speaks of New Hampshire. It looks like New Hampshire. But that is not the reason they have the concrete there. My father-in-law used to travel to Europe, specifically Germany, on business, including in 1989 and 1990. And as many of you would remember, that is when the Berlin Wall fell. My father-in-law was able to secure a piece of the Berlin Wall and bring it back to the States. So if you visit their house in Mount Vernon, you will find a piece of Cold War history. Kind of interesting. But only if you know the story. If you know nothing of its provenance, if you know nothing of the history of that time, it's a piece of cement, concrete. The history matters. It invests it with meaning. And that's what we see in today's lesson from Joshua. Joshua, I didn't include these verses, was commanded by God to have the people create the monument. And without the stories being told to their children and their children's children, this monument to their arrival in the promised land would have become a pile of rocks, completely devoid of meaning. But instead, it was meant to be a memorial to the great things God had done. Now, if we look at the book of Joshua and we read it carefully, we'll see there are lots of great stories, but there's some contradictions. And indeed, events are portrayed in one way in part of the book and another in another part of the book. Chapters 13 through the end are part of the Deuteronomic history, the story of the kings of Israel, the battles they fought, how the people came into the land, the relationships with other people. Things were complicated, they were messy, they were violent. A good history lesson. But the first 12 chapters of the book read differently. Things there are rather cut and dried. And Israel shows up in the land, they take over, there really aren't any squabbles, the opposition falls very quickly. It all seems cut and dried. These chapters were not written by a historian or someone trying to do history, even if of a religious bent. They were written by a theologian. These chapters do not aim to tell the history of Israel so much as they seek to engage in theology. Consider that. This is theology. This is a statement about God. And what were the authors trying to tell us? Remember, God had made a promise to Abraham that his children would be numerous and that they would have a land in which to live. And the authors of this book which was written long after the Israelites came into Canaan, wanted to be clear that God keeps his promises. God is good for his word. And the corollary to that is the people who got into Israel were not responsible. There is no great generalship. There are no canny politicians. It was God and God alone who gave Israel the land. Indeed, it was God and God alone who had delivered them from slavery in Egypt. Now, before we think that this lesson is all about making us feel small and insignificant, consider that God chose Israel to be his partners, to do his work in this world, to be a light unto the nations, and then through Jesus, all of humanity. I hope that makes you feel good about yourselves. It should. But that can be hard work. Now, you may remember that we've read this passage recently, earlier this fall. Peggy Bendroth came here and helped kick off our 250th anniversary year and preached on this passage. But it's also a good lesson for us to hear when we kick off our stewardship season. We're not just about funding operations and current programming. We are here to take care of the community of Jesus Christ in Lebanon and in the Upper Valley. We are part of a long chain of witnesses. And our past is prologue. And what we do today will be prologue for future generations. What we do here in this church will be noticed by the wider community. I know that because the wider community talks to me. People notice the immigration banner on the front of our church. People know about the community dinner we host. People know about our vibrant music ministry. All of this is telling the wider community, our doors are open and we want you to come in. We want you to be part of what we do here. Are we perfect at it? Nope. Can we be better? Sure. But that is a far cry from our being a fortress church that is just interested in itself. Now you might be thinking, okay, great, music, service to the community, fellowship. I can get music through Camerata New England, I can get service through Listen, and I can get fellowship through the American Legion or the Kiwanis. What makes what we do here special? Well, it's what we're doing right now. We are joined together to worship God. And we sing his praises and we confess our concerns. And we do that here week after week, month after month, year after year. And we've been doing that since 1768. And members of the wider Christian community have been doing that for 2,000 years. That's pretty incredible. We are stewards of the story. We have been invited to take care of it and to share it and to pass it on. Now, being a steward is not the same thing as being an owner. Now, we all like to own things, right? I mean, who wants to have to pay a mortgage and share their house with the bank? Who wants to have to put something on layaway? You want to have the thing now. And I suspect many of us have known people who have felt that they own the church. It's my church. I give the money. I put in the time. I've been here a long time. But guess what? It's not your church, and it's not mine either. We are all just passing through here. And unless Jesus Christ comes back tomorrow, or we have some incredibly inept mismanagement of our assets, or a fire burns this building down, this congregation will continue beyond any of us in this room today. Think about that. You have an important role to play in the telling and the writing of the story of First Congregational Church. This is holy work. And so I will join our stewardship committee in inviting you to make a pledge of money and of time and of skills to this community. And to think of that as an act of worship. Even the most mundane things, like piling rocks one on top of another, can have great meaning. But we have to tell others why we're doing things. We have to believe in what we're doing. We have to recognize that what we are doing is a calling from God. Think about that. You have been called by God, not just me, but all of you, each in his or her own way, is called to do holy work. So with this in mind, I hope that we will build our own monument for the future, knowing that it's not a testament to us and what we do, but to the work that God has done and is doing and will do here in the community and in the future.